I want to take a moment to acknowledge my co-authors here, collaborators at CDC, and also Jennifer Cohen at Battelle. I have no relationships to disclose. As I'm sure many of you know, breastfeeding reduces health risks in children and mothers in both developing and developed countries. In the 2007 ARC report, we had a nice meta-analysis of several health outcomes associated with breastfeeding to really understand better what's happening in the United States around breastfeeding. Does breastfeeding and breast milk make a difference? And we know that it does. You can see the conditions here that are included in the ARC report, reduced risks for all of these conditions associated with breastfeeding and being fed breast milk. So my focus today is really not on health outcomes, but more on looking at the influence of maternity practices on breastfeeding. There was a study by Di Girolamo et al. In 2008 that looked at the number of baby-friendly steps in place in a hospital, and what they found was that it predicts the risk of breastfeeding cessation before 6 weeks, and this is particularly among women who are intending to breastfeed at least 2 months. So just to orient you to this graph a little bit, if a mother down on the x-axis on the bottom, if she received no baby-friendly steps while she was in the hospital for childbirth, then 30% of those women who did not receive any of the steps were not going to breastfeed, were not breastfeeding at 6 weeks. They stopped before that time. And what you can see is the more baby-friendly steps that she received, the more likely she was still to be breastfeeding at 6 weeks. I'm not going to go through each of these, but again, this is kind of looking at supplementary feeding. We know that this is happening a lot in hospitals in the United States. We collect information on that through the National Immunization Survey. But what you can see here is looking specifically at whether an intervention was effective that allowed only for medically indicated supplementation of breastfed newborns versus ad lib supplementing. And what you can see here is there are a higher number of breastfeeds for those who only get the supplementation when it's medically indicated. They get a higher volume of breast milk. And it also has an effect on their duration of breastfeeding. Those who were supplemented less are breastfeeding longer. We also know about the influence of these discharge packs that mothers are given after they leave the when they leave the hospital. And one study found that receiving a commercial discharge pack that contained infant formula increased the likelihood of supplementation within the first 10 weeks postpartum by 39%. So what we wanted to know at CDC was what's happening with maternity practices in the U.S. We knew about a few samples that had been done, a few small studies, but we didn't have the national picture. So we began with the MPINC survey, which is Maternity Practices in Infant Nutrition and Care, started for the first time in 2007, and this is a biennial national census. So we send our surveys out to all the hospitals and birth centers in the United States that routinely provide maternity care. And we do this every 2 years. We've done one in 2007, one in 2009, and we'll do another in 2011, and so forth. We use a telephone screening process to identify a key informant who is the person that is most knowledgeable in that facility about breastfeeding practices and policies. We do ensure confidentiality so that we can encourage respondents to tell us honestly what's happening. We don't want them to tell us what they think we want to hear. We want to know what's really happening so we know what we can do to help improve practices and ultimately improve breastfeeding. The MPINC survey has a specific goal, at least at this point, Brianna, which is to look at healthy, full-term newborns. So we want to look at, Brianna's particularly interested in preterm infants, but right now we're focusing on healthy term infants, and we want to know what's happening with these babies. We used the 10 steps as a guide for many of the questions that we include, but we don't call them the 10 steps, and that's intentional. There is a little bit of a backlash about the 10 steps in some facilities, so we just ask about the specific practices associated with those. What's nice about the MPINC survey also is that it's representative of practices at all types of U.S. maternity facilities, not just hospitals, but also birth centers, large centers, small centers, private, for-profit, military. We include everyone. And what's nice about that, too, is that it allows us to assess what's happening at a national level, at a state level, and also at the individual hospital or facility level. When I say hospital, I really mean hospital and birth center also. Also, we are able to assess change across surveys. We only have 2 surveys completed so far, but it will be nice to be able to look at what's happening over time in the United States with maternity practices. As I mentioned, we've done 2 so far. And we identified the key informant. Respondents are allowed to complete the survey by mail, or they can do so online. There are about 52 questions in the survey. Most of them have some sort of numeric response, like a percent or a number that we ask them to provide to us. We expect that they might have to consult with others to really answer the survey questions, and we encourage that so that we have accurate responses. There are also checklists, you know, what services do you provide, check here, and we also use some Likert scales. When we thought about, well, now that we have all this data, what are we going to do with it? We had to sit down and think about a scoring plan. So for our benchmark reports, is what I'm going to talk a little bit about later, we took 36 of the questions off the survey, and we scored them on a 0 to 100 scale, so 100 being the best possible score, and a practice that is supportive of breastfeeding. And I want to just go through a quick example here. For example, how many mothers are encouraged to hold their healthy term infant skin to skin for at least 30 minutes within 2 hours after delivery for uncomplicated cesarean births? So again, I want to point out that we're asking about it, even though we don't want cesarean to be typical. We're looking not at the complicated situation where things are unusual, what in general is going on. And how we decided to allocate the scores was to give 100 points when a hospital or a birth center said that 90% of their mothers, or most of their mothers, are encouraged to do this. And then you see the decreasing scores down to 70, 30, and 0 if they reported that fewer of their mothers are encouraged to engage in this practice. We took all of the questions, the 36 questions, and we categorized them into 7 subscales, which I'll tell you about in a minute. And to get the subscale scores, we just took an average of the points for each of the items that comprised the scale. For our overall MPINC score, it was just an average of the subscale score, so it's not too complicated. These are the subscales that are included in the MPINC survey. I'm not going to go through them, but you can see what they are here. They just are designed to cover the full experience in the hospital or birth center for childbirth, from labor and delivery through discharge. So here, this is a map of the 2007, that's cut off, but this is the 2000 state mean overall MPINC scores. We put them into quartiles. And basically, the lighter the color of the state, the lower the MPINC score. The scores ranged in 2007 from 48 to 81, and just a reminder, that is out of 100. And you can see a pattern of very low scores throughout the Southeast. We wanted to just get a sense, well, does that seem to correspond with what's happening with breastfeeding? So looking at the percent of children that are still breastfeeding at 6 months, you see sort of a similar pattern here. The lower percentages are in the states that have those lower MPINC scores. Some of you may have seen this slide yesterday in Larry's talk, but this is just to give you a comparison of the 2007 and 2009 MPINC scores, looking at the overall score, and it was 63 in 2007 and 65 in 2009, so not a huge change, and you can look across. The first one on the left is always 2007, and then 2009 is on the right. So what you can see here also is that the lowest subscale score is for discharge care. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. But again, I just want to remind you that this is out of a possible score of 100, so there's a lot of work to be done. So the first subscale score, labor and delivery, I want to look at a little bit of what's happening there. Just a sec. My scores aren't showing. Well, that's not good. Well, I may not be able to tell you very much about that because it's not showing up in the, just a moment. That's interesting. Okay. Well, all right. Okay, well, what I can tell you about feeding of breastfed infants is that there is quite a bit of supplementation going on across hospitals in the United States. There are over 89% of facilities reported that they were giving water to breastfed newborns, which is a practice that is not medically indicated and is very detrimental to breastfeeding. There's also a high percentage of hospitals that are reporting giving formula to breastfed infants, and these are, again, healthy term breastfed infants. We don't know if the reason for that was because the parent requested it, but again, it's something that it's an opportunity for education. If you have a healthy term infant, then what you want to do is you want to provide breast milk and get your supply working the entire time you're in the hospital. When you start with supplementation early in the hospital, it's a slippery slope, and supplementation is likely to continue and breastfeeding is likely to stop earlier. So we looked at not only water and formula, but we also looked at sugar water, glucose water, which is also being given to a substantial number of healthy term breastfed infants. Breastfeeding assistance was one of the brighter subscale items. When we looked at that, we found that most women in the United States are receiving assistance with breastfeeding. They're getting some instruction and hands-on experience with breastfeeding in the hospital. I'll have to leave it at that for breastfeeding assistance. Looking at mother-infant contact, we do know that skin-to-skin really should be the standard of care, and what we found is that it's not. Less than half of facilities are encouraging mothers to engage in skin-to-skin care immediately after birth or shortly after cesarean section. We also know that mothers and infants are separated routinely for reasons that are not necessarily justified. When we looked at some of the reasons, we found that change of shift was a reason that they were saying they would separate mothers and infants, taking the infant out of the room. There were some times that we felt it was justified. If a mother was taking a bath and couldn't watch the baby, we didn't penalize for that. But there are very few reasons that you really need to remove an infant from a mother's room. Looking at routine procedures, is a baby taken out of the room for that? A lot of the procedures could be done in the room, and so we want to encourage facilities to think about keeping mothers and infants together. Looking at discharge support, a couple of things here. We know there are several things that would be helpful to mothers, supportive to breastfeeding families when they leave the hospital. For example, having a referral to some sort of breastfeeding support outside in the community. And when we looked at what percentage of hospitals provided all of these types of referrals, it was low. Women are really not getting the discharge care and advice that they need to be successful if they have breastfeeding problems when they leave. We looked also at what kind of support hospitals provide. Do they follow up with a telephone call to a mother, or do they just provide a telephone number that a mother has to use to call them if she has a problem? We really want a more proactive approach from hospitals and birth centers to reach out to the mother rather than to force her to seek help on her own when she's in such a vulnerable time. The other thing I want to mention here is formula bags. So again, we looked at what percentage of facilities were providing discharge packs to breastfeeding mothers. That was our specific interest. Is there formula in that pack, and are you giving that to a mother who said she's breastfeeding? And it was a very high. The majority of hospitals are, and this is a practice we know is detrimental to breastfeeding. Staff training is very low. There were only 9% of facilities that reported across the U.S. that they have their new staff participate in at least 18 hours of breastfeeding education. And when we looked at, is there at least just an annual assessment of breastfeeding competency in returning staff, that percentage was very low. I believe it was about 50%. So we're not assessing. Are people giving the right kind of information? Are they competent to provide breastfeeding support to the people they're caring for? I just want to point something out here, structural and organizational aspects of care delivery. So this is a breastfeeding mother and her baby, and you can see just the influence of the bottle culture on the blanket that the baby's wrapped in. There are bottles all over that blanket. So we have to think about even just the smallest things that you might take for granted. Are you a breastfeeding supportive environment, or are you sending other messages to your patients? So what do we know from MPINC? We know that skin-to-skin contact is not standard practice. Healthy term breastfed newborns are being given formula, glucose, water, and water in the hospital, which most of the time is not going to be medically necessary. We're separating mothers and newborns, so it's going to be hard for mothers to learn how to recognize the cues that her infant wants to breastfeed and to get help with breastfeeding when she has people around her to do so. We don't have a really proactive kind of discharge care. We're telling the mother, here are some phone numbers, here are some places you can go, good luck. We need to do a little bit more to help mothers out. And we're giving formula to breastfeeding mothers when they leave the hospital, so we're sending not a very good message there. Staff training is just very inadequate, and also when we look at breastfeeding policies, which I didn't discuss, they're not comprehensive. We know policies are important. There might be a couple of elements that are included in several hospitals' policies, but and Jennifer Cohen will talk a little bit more about that in her session later. So what do we do now? Now that we know these things, well, what we're doing at CDC is we have two efforts, particularly, which are benchmark reports that we provide to every respondent facility, every hospital and birth center in the U.S. that completed an MPINC survey. And we have state reports that give this the overall picture of what's happening in the state with breastfeeding support and regard to maternity practices. Just to give you kind of a sense of what's included in the benchmark and state reports, what we do is this just looks at facility discharge care. That's a subscale. We provide an explanation of, well, what is this particular item that you're giving me a score on? And here it is, assurance of ambulatory breastfeeding support. So we give an explanation of what that means. And then we give a rationale. Why is this important? So why we included all of these things in this report is because we do think of it not only as a way to give information back to facilities and let them know what they can be working on, but there are a variety of people we send this report to. They may not be as familiar with breastfeeding. They may not know why these particular things are important and why they can be helpful or harmful if they're not adhered to. We have scores. We give them their subscale score here. It was 68 for this particular facility. But we also give them information on how it compares to the national score, other facilities in their state, and then facilities across the U.S. of a comparable size, meaning their annual number of births. In addition, we give them what the ideal response to the question would have been, what is the best kind of care you can give. We told them what their response was, and then we told them what their score was for each item. These are the people to whom we send the reports, the facility reports. At hospitals, you can see the people there, the CEO, the Director of Quality Improvement, Chief of Obstetrics and Pediatrics, the mother-baby unit manager, and the key informant. And in birth centers, you can see who we give it to there. So our goal was not to give it back to the people who might be the choir. We want to give it back to people throughout the hospital who, especially the quality improvement directors, they want the best scores they can possibly get. So that has been a really effective way of getting things moving. We've heard from hospitals. When hospitals and birth centers are thinking about how to focus their efforts, okay, well, now we have this information. How do we prioritize? Because we can't do it all. We can't fix everything all at once. We encourage looking at the strongest evidence base. Not only that, but thinking about, well, what's feasible in your facility? What is a short-term thing you could accomplish? What's easy to communicate? Not only us communicating to facilities, but also within the facility, how can they communicate to staff and managers about the importance of making changes? So we just completed our analysis of the 2009 survey, and we have put together the 2009 benchmark reports. I can tell you that they're in clearance right now, and when they'll be out, I'm not exactly sure, but I hope that it'll be soon. and they'll be mailed out to all the participating facilities. Right now, if you're interested in looking at state reports, we do post those online, and you can find them at the MPINC website at CDC, and right now we have the 2007 state reports there. Anybody can look at the state reports. We are working with the Joint Commission on breastfeeding efforts, and as I mentioned, we will repeat the survey again in the fall of 2011. There are so many people who work hard on the MPINC survey, people who helped initiate it, people who provide feedback on it and help us improve our reports, so I just want to take a moment to acknowledge all of them. Thank you.